With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Keep moving. Just don't let anything hold you back. Just if you want to jump on that plane and go, do it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ricky Richards Represents, the show where we talk to leading figures of creativity and innovation. Today, I'm talking to Harry Fricker, the designer and founder of Fricker UK, about how he's able to work and travel and his advice for sustaining a nomadic lifestyle. Hey everyone, hope you're well. Thank you for tuning into the podcast. Today I'm joined with an old friend of mine called Harry Fricker, who is a designer and a long-term traveller. I'm sure I'm not doing justice for what he does day to day, so I'm going to pass you over to Harry if you wouldn't mind explaining a little bit more about yourself.
My name's Harry Fricker. I'm a graphic designer, creative director. I work from Vancouver, Canada, but I have a kind of big tie with the UK, which is where I'm from, which is home. So I'm kind of between the two, and then I pick up projects around the world, I guess, mainly North America, but I still have a few in the UK. Just back and forth working for them as for direction and design.
As you say, you travel quite a lot, and the way we know each other is from back home in North Devon. Like, I visited your house. You used to live in the middle of the woods, effectively. I just wondered, like, how much that influenced your design, and just the fact, like, why did you actually get into design? Because of all of our friends, me and you were the only two that really went down into that field.
Well, I guess living where I did and where I grew up was a huge influence. My dad has always been a photographer, a travel writer, worked in publishing for many years, and that kind of, you know, where we lived was his dream home. That was where he wanted to be, and it was this beautiful nest in the forest, flowing fields, close to the ocean. So that influenced my creativity. I was doing music. I went to university and studied music.
Can people search for your dad's stuff?
Yeah, GoldenEye Guides. They're guidebooks for the UK, North Devon, Cornwall, Lake District, Peak District, and then a number of walking maps, cycling maps. You know, you can find them in WH Smith to Waterstones.
Are they his creations, or does he do it for other people?
No, completely his creations. All self-published through GoldenEye Guides, and has been doing it for 30 years. From working as one of the copywriters at Collins in London 30, 40 years ago, and then he did a big walk. He walked through Europe, like, I'm going to walk to Africa, kind of ditch everything. Kind of came back, realised there isn't good maps, there isn't good guidebooks, good, you know, this was kind of before this kind of like boom of travel books now. Yeah, and just started doing walking maps and cycling maps. From then, you know, still does it today. You know, one book just launched a couple months ago for the Cotswolds.
Well, I was going to say, because you've always been quite an independent thinker, right from when we were kids, even things like you used to like the trampoline, and you used to go walking through the hills and do, you just did your own thing. You weren't so much, it wasn't that you weren't part of the gang, but it was like you had your own interests, whereas everyone else seemed to be quite sheepish, you know, in what they did, and myself included in that. So I guess, was it maybe your dad that encouraged you to be so independent in the way you approach things, or?
Yeah, sure. Both my parents, you know, they have been pretty inspiring. Yeah, we'd go out every weekend. There would be like a new walk to do, or, you know, check check something out with my dad. We're pretty tight family, and we would always go on these crazy adventures, you know, to the moors or, you know, I'd go up to the Lake District with him cycling, checking out some new routes. You know, I guess that kind of influenced my travel for sure. To know that there's no limits, you can just go whenever you want.
And did it give you an appreciation for nature at a young age?
Sure, the appreciation for what was surrounding me, appreciation for the ocean. I grew up in a town in Cheltenham, if you've heard of Cheltenham, kind of Midlands. And then we moved to North Devon when I was about 9-10 years old, and that was kind of like, wow, we moved to the ocean, moved from a landlocked town to, you know, the most beautiful place. So from that, I really appreciated it, and have since, and definitely it's grown.
So I guess the crux of this conversation, and the thing that a lot of people are going to want to know, is around being a nomadic creative. And you've successfully sustained yourself while working and traveling. I guess what things have enabled you to live a nomadic lifestyle and work on the go?
Yeah, once I realised that traveling was easy, or I found it easy. I had a short gap year between my first and my second year of university, where I did my first year of music and realised I don't really want to be doing this. Let's go and check out the world, I guess. I said it's pretty cliche going on the gap year, but it was to go and see things, see what I wanted to be doing. And I realized that it was easy to kind of jump on a plane, you know, after working, 6 months in a kitchen to save up. And I came back, went back to university and realized that I still want to travel. I still needed to find what I wanted to do. So I came to Canada about 5 years ago and picked up a design role, just doing small little bits of design on a visa. I was working, just had a small 1 year Canadian visa, worked as a marketing design assistant, and realized that's super easy. Yeah, the language is the same, kind of work the same way. And I've been drawn back to the West Coast ever since.
What is it about the West Coast?
The beauty of it, North, like British Columbia, up here, the Pacific Northwest is just incredible. We have the mountains to the ocean and just so much space. Vancouver's like a small city, but you can get out within 30 minutes and you're, in the middle of the wilderness. And quite a lot of the Pacific Northwest is like that, from kind of escaping from Seattle, and the same with Portland. There's so much space to go and get lost in and to be inspired by.
Do you take on a project if the money's good, if it enables you to travel, or do you still see that you have to enjoy the project?
I've got to, be passionate about the project and love the concept to take it on. Some projects I don't have a huge budget, but then other projects, are the bread and butter that keep me going on the side. And then, I pick up on the smaller projects that I can be passionate about. So every project that I have right now is in a different location. They're not all, say, in London. They're not all in New York. They're dotted around the world, and I've kind of selected them in that way so I can escape to this place or just keep moving. To be able to keep moving inspires me.
We once had a conversation, and you were telling me about some of the tricks you'd learned in order to travel around the world. Things like loyalty cards with airlines and kind of things like that. I was just wondering, what tips do you have for people that are looking to travel? Like, how can people do it eat more easily? What have you learned through your journey, I guess?
Well, there's companies out there that can make things a lot easier for you. For instance, a company called Roam that right now I'm actually kind of looking into, that they're an international network of communal living spaces from Bali to San Francisco, and then between there's Miami, Madrid, Tokyo, and even London kind of popping up soon. And these are kind of apartment blocks, or really nice, beautifully designed buildings that you can go out and you have a room, you pay your rent to them, you know, up to $2,000 or so, and you have the ability to go and stay in these places all around the world. To know that you've got this hub, this structure that you can live through, is a really incredible help. I think that really helps the nomadic style of living.
In terms of nomadic style of living, most people don't have $2,000 to spend every month on their rent. Like, how does that differ from Airbnb? I'm curious.
A month's worth of rent with Airbnb is going to be more than $2,000. $2,000 is the price of a good apartment in Vancouver. So it's basically, that's your, you wouldn't have, unless you're doing incredibly well, which, you know, the idea is to have a base that you pay rent for, and then you have this on top.
And are these single rooms, or are you able to travel with a partner?
Yeah, you can travel with a partner. I know there's a number of other companies that are doing a similar thing, and they have different rates, different, you know, standards. By all means, Rome might not be the right one for some people, and other companies have different locations. For me, this company seems to have the right locations for me right now. That's a very good use of, that helps moving around. And then there's other companies as well. There's a company called Duffel that I use, and they're basically like a wardrobe, that and they'll send you your wardrobe to anywhere in the world, so you don't have to travel with a huge amount of luggage. You just take your hand luggage and you kind of jump onto their app. I've previously sent my set wardrobe to them. They have it all cleaned and ready and in a bag, and I'll say that I'm, you know, landing in New York in 3 days, and they'll have it there at the location I'm landing in, so I don't have to worry about it. And then they'll pick it up and dry clean it and take it on.
So prior to all these services then, would you just travel with as much as you needed in a bag and then stay at Airbnbs?
Yeah, totally. I still do that. I still, you know, if I'm leaving in a late notice, I have my own kit that I'll take with me. If I'm going somewhere that ideally I'd like to, you know, do some surfing or some snowboarding, or, you know, get out and do a little bit more.
And so do you always hire with regards to boards and snowboards and that kind of stuff?
I travel with my surfboard quite a lot. I take it. I have the perfect board that travels with me. I take it around, as depending on the airline, but yeah, I'll take it with me. I have boards in the UK. So if I'm in Europe, that's fine. But then over here, I have some also. But I'll travel. I do carry a lot of things when I travel, mainly camera equipment. That's like definitely the heaviest thing, and takes up the majority of my bag space.
Well, that's quite a nice little segue, because my next question was that Instagram's played quite a big role in, I guess, your freelance success to some degree. I wondered if you would have been able to do what you've done without it. Without the fact that you've got that loyal following on through social.
Yes, Instagram's been incredible. Been incredible help. It really helped kickstart a direction for me. About 3 years ago, they sent out a request to see if I wanted to be hosted on their kind of who to follow list. And I was up there for a week or so, and it turned my followers from, you know, a few thousand to, you know, it reached nearly 60,000-70,000 followers in a matter of days. And a number of them it kind of felt like they were ghost followers. Or did they really want to be following me, these people? Was it just a follow for follow, expecting a follow back? And in short, that number kind of declined after a few weeks, realizing that I'm not just posting pictures of fluffy cats and puppies. Which is, you know, what seems to be filling up most people's Instagram feeds.
So many people plow huge amounts of time into their socials, but what kind of return? I mean, you're probably in the top 5%, if not top 1% of users in terms of your following. what returns have you seen? Like, I'd be interested to know what big opportunities come as a result of that kind of following.
So about a few years ago, after this had kind of kicked off, a chap that is now a very good friend of mine got in touch and was from Portland, Oregon, was in London, wanted to meet up. And it was pretty random. He said, you know, I love your photography. I'd love to see if we could work together. I've seen a number of your design projects, etc. Do you want to meet up? So I kind of, yeah, just jumped on the train from Cornwall, went up to London, met up with this guy called Jason. And from there, we have kind of flourished an incredible working relationship. And within a matter of months, I was over working in Portland, helping him set up a new brand, one of his companies called Elsewhere, which are based in Portland, with him introducing me to a number of different companies on the West Coast that kind of linked up with more work and kind of just snowballed a little bit. And that really kind of introduced me into the kind of West Coast brands, a lot of the brands from Portland, Seattle, and, you know, California. So that was purely through connecting through Instagram,
which is fascinating. When we had a conversation about that and you told me that you trimmed down your following from effectively 60 to 20, was a conscious decision for you to do that. Very few people would do that. You know, that's seems counterproductive to so many people, but could you maybe explain the rationale behind that?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, you post an image, you post a picture, and yeah, you got 30,000, 40,000 followers, but you see that you only get a few hundred likes or a few, you know, the feedback, you know, you might not get people commenting. You want, you know, it's to build community through an account. I want people to comment and tell me why they like it, or, you know, I want to hear what people are saying. And I wasn't getting that at all. I just felt like I was posting images and 50,000 people weren't seeing it. So I realized that, why do it? I didn't feel like there was a sense of community that I had expected there to be through it. So I just reached out and said, yeah.
So what's really nice now then is that you've effectively cultivated this quite core audience. And the for people that don't know or haven't followed you on Instagram, I guess right now is probably a good time to drop your handle. What's your handle on Instagram?
Yeah, it's Fricker UK, which is FRICKER UK.
The kind of images that you post, they're of kind of outdoor landscapes, beautiful scenery images, and kind of outdoor living, lifestyle, travel, that kind of stuff. Obviously, you then get approached by brands who want to leverage your influence on those platforms. And we've had conversations about this because you don't actually like posting about other, like, brands so much, do you? Do you turn down those opportunities, or how do you handle that kind of stuff?
Well, I get a number of requests to take on companies' gear and, yeah, post a few images in, you know, in trade for kit. I don't really want to be doing that. I have one company that I work with, and that I'm an ambassador for, that I have a stronghold to, and they're incredible guys from San Francisco. They sell and produce incredible products. They're called Huckberry. They kind of take on other brands and promote their products, and they're doing a really good job of it. And for kit, for me, they help me out if I'm going on a trip and I'm heading, you know, down to the, you know, Nevada desert, or heading up north British Columbia, and I feel like I need some product to assist with that. If that's, you know, new hiking boots to, you know, a down jacket because it's middle of the winter, they'll sort me out. And in return, sure, there'll be images.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is kind of sent back, and you know they'll use them for whatever, for social media or their campaigns. And I'm happy to do that with them, because we have built a strong relationship. So other companies that there's also other companies that come to me and ask, but some people just want it for, you know, we'll give you kit, give us some images, and then that's the end of the relationship.
I'm curious as well, because you know the brands inside out, and especially the brands that you're into, the more ethical brands. The only one that I know off the top of my head is kind of like Patagonia. I know that they tend to have an ethical tilt, I guess. But could you, just for people that are looking to be more conscious about the kind of products they're buying, could you maybe name drop a few different brands that you like and that, you know, you're inspired by, I guess?
Sure. For the UK, there's a brand called Finisterre, which is based in Cornwall. They're an outdoor clothing brand, you know, they were focused around cold water surfing, but that's kind of expanded a little bit now. And I worked for them a few years ago, and they make, you know, incredible products, very sustainable, functional, you know, have a strong story and a brilliant team behind them. Their vision is strong, and I really recommend them.
I've seen Finisterre products, and they are great. And the reason I'm asking you this question is, you know, it's not to be shouting about brands, but a lot of these really good brands that put a lot of effort into their products aren't as well received as, you know, the high street fashion brands. And anything that can be done to kind of help people that are producing ethical products and that kind of thing, I think it's worthy to shout their name, you know.
I totally agree. So yeah, Finisterre, brilliant brand. You said Patagonia, they're also, you know, I love their products. And then there are hundreds of brands out there. It's hard to kind of define to a few.
Just going back one step, I failed to ask you this question. Like, what advice would you give to people who are looking to build their social? You know, like what errors do you see people making, and what do you do to give you more reach? And for someone that doesn't have much following, do you think it's worthy of investing the amount of time that so many people seem to put into it?
That's a tricky one for me to, for advice. It's don't just post anything, you know, be passionate about what you're posting about, you know, maybe a story behind that image, or just some depth. I like to have people comment back and, you know, ask questions, or, you know, hear if they can direct me to go check this out, or while you're there, check this out also. So trying to build community is the best way to, you know, organically grow. That's what I feel like I try and do. I don't overpost, you know. I sometimes go a couple of weeks without even posting an image.
I think you're a definite advocate of quality over quantity, right?
Yeah, sure. I'm thinking about it now, and there definitely has been times where I haven't posted for maybe a month. You know, but that's probably because I've just been sat in my office, not going out much, and getting these chances to take these images. So,
well, I'm glad you've said that, because that's so contrary to the advice that so many people receive. But I do, and I fall victim to this, that I haven't posted on my socials for a week and a half, and I end up taking a nasty shot with my iPhone instead of waiting for a good opportunity with when I'm out and about with my camera, you know. So yeah, maybe I'm going to take that advice on and give it a go. Like, kind of slightly contradictory to that advice, or maybe it isn't, I don't know. I find it fascinating the way you don't have a website and that you basically post your work in dribs and drabs through social, but you don't really have an online presence for your design work, and yet you're non-stop busy. And so I was just wondering if maybe you could explain that and how you've come to this situation where you've got consistent work without having an online window.
Well, I guess website-wise, that's probably it's me being a little lazy, or just maybe not lazy, having the time to build a site and show off the work that I have been working on or done in the past or working on currently. For people to see my work, I have a portfolio. Yeah, I have I have one made up. So people request that, through my website, there's that kind of like tip to, if you want to really get in touch, shoot me an email and I'll send you what I'm working on. So from that, that's how I kind of pick up the work.
How do people know to click on that in the first place?
Very organically, word of mouth. I've been lucky to pick up some projects that have just developed into relationships, and they passed me on to someone else, or they've passed on my name. It's been very word of mouth. And that has, that at points that has really dried up, and there has been, lulls where I haven't had the work for a couple months, and then, it all comes at once, as, you can imagine, when you don't want it all to come at once, everyone's coming at all angles. But right now, currently, things are, I am very busy, and that's purely from just word of mouth, things picking up. And I'm fairly active on LinkedIn. I link with people, and that I feel maybe I want to work with you in down the line, and or a company down the line, but not right now. So I'll, maybe check out who is their MD or who's their designer, who's their in-house team, and why would they want to come to me? So I'll kind of, I'll drop a few, connections here and there.
Who were your biggest influences growing up?
My dad. Yeah, he biggest influence for travel design, exploring, kind of, doing what you want to do. He is the one for inspiration in that way. And then also my mum. She's never really questioned anything. She's always been, go for it. If that's what you want to do, if that's keeping you happy, go for it. I wanted to do music, but now I barely touch my guitar or any instrument, but that's because they helped me choose the path. So yeah, I would totally say they're the two people that influenced me the most.
What's one thing that you've learned that you think's changed your life forever?
Yeah, the ability to travel and the ease of travel. I know I hear so many people saying, oh, I can't go there because I have no money, or oh, that's really hard to get there. But, a plane ticket's a few hundred pounds, which is, yeah, it's a lot of money at a point. But, if you work hard for it, and it's a plane ticket, and then what, a hostel. So you could meet someone and give yourself a few weeks, and if it doesn't work, go back. But if it does, keep going. You don't have to have pockets of money to travel the world. I definitely didn't, and I still don't. I just make things work.
Let's move on to a couple of questions and literally just go with things that are on the tip of your brain as such. So do you have a favorite movie or documentary, or maybe director?
I have a favorite documentary. Many people probably have seen it. It's called 180 Degrees South. And it is a film about a bunch of people that trip down to Patagonia to climb an incredible mountain that I can't seem to think of right now. It's retracing a trip of two guys that made a trip down there in the 70s, Yvonne Chabon. If Chabord, which is the Patagonia founder, and Doug Tompkins, who was the North Face founder, the two brands, and they made this trip down, in the 60s, 70s, and it's retracing their trip, and it's a sport bit of surfing, bit of climbing, and then talking about their, you know, their journey. And it's a pretty amazing film. So that's inspired me to travel, and then the passion of, you know, those subliminal messaging of their brands, of course, that's made me maybe that's really what it is. It's a huge marketing tool, but it's a brilliant documentary. So, and then I watched a lot of surf movies, and I spent a lot of time watching surf movies, a lot of time watching skate movies for surf. That kind of made me want to travel to these, you know, incredible places around the world that no one had been to, or that had little amounts of people. And then all the skate movies that I watched made me want to go to check out all these cities. You know, so there was maybe, you know, that those two things have really influenced my travel. To skate around a city is an incredible feeling. And growing up watching these, yeah, skate films, city, that's my city connection. And then, you know, these, the coastal, yeah, endless summer, that kind of drew me to.
For people that are interested in the surf and skate culture, like, who are some of your favorites?
For skateboarding, I kind of grew up watching a guy called Chris Haslam skate. And I fortunately had the chance to meet him and watch him skateboard in Vancouver. He's actually a Canadian, Vancouver local. So he's an incredible skateboarder. And then also a guy called Mike Vallely. He was pretty big back in the 90s. Those two skateboarders were very different. And they really inspired me. I know we skated with a lot of, when we were kids, we were always down at the bowl skateboarding, weren't we? So that was it was a real big thing. So those two guys are my, for skateboarding. And then surfing, the Malloy brothers, Keith Malloy, Dan Malloy, and Chris Malloy, are three incredible surfers. And now they all work in, you know, they're film, do a lot of directing for, like, you know, a lot of surf, a lot of outdoor adventure. And they run a picture house out of California called Farm League, and they make incredible films. And but the three of them are just incredible, inspiring surfers.
Fantastic. I'll link all these up in the show notes and people can check them out. Due to your travel, I'm sure you've got lots of little accessories and stuff, and I was just wondering if there's one object that's made a huge impact on your life. And, well, maybe not on your life, but what's one little thing you carry around with you that you you really like?
It's kind of bad to say, but it's my phone and my camera. But then, yeah, my phone, because I use it as a camera so often.
So you do shoot with your phone?
Yeah, I shoot with my phone all the time. You know, the iPhone is, you know, the iPhone 6S, it's got an incredible camera on it. And so that's it. That sounds bad to say, that's the one thing that I really cherish and carry around with me all the time. But yeah, it has everything on it now. You know, it's so good. It's my bloodline.
What events would you recommend people go to? Or just anywhere in the world, really. Like, what are some events that you've attended that you'd be like, the some of the best experiences you've ever had?
The one that's really helped me for my work and, you know, linking up with a lot of people was actually a kind of a clothing trade show, a brand trade show called Capsule. I know they have them in New York, LA, Paris, and I went to the one in Las Vegas a couple years ago. It's really for people finding brands to buy and selling their stores all around the world. But I went to it to discover brands and introduce myself as a photographer, designer, as a creative. And a lot of the people I went up and talked to were a bit taken aback because they'd been talking about their products all day to sell them. And I was actually coming to them to sell myself as a creative. And from that, I picked up a number of different clients and some really fun projects, and kind of fueled me to keep traveling and keep moving. So yeah, that's the one. That was nuts. It was, yeah. I've recommended people do it. You know that it's fresh for these brands to have someone else talk to, kind of change their conversation up a bit.
Alrighty then. Well, I think that's a great note to almost finish up on. I guess things to ask: do you have any projects going on right now? If so, what are they? And finally, where's the best place for people to reach you?
Project right now, I've got a really fun one in Jamaica, which just starting, and that's to creatively direct a new boutique hotel resort down there. So it's just currently being built. So working with the architect firm, interior firm, and then I'm pulling together all the branding, photography, visuals, and that's going to take another, I guess, 18 months, but that's a pretty big project I'm working on, and keeps me traveling. So that's that. And then, yeah, to reach me, yeah, you can jump on my very minimal website and catch my email, or, you know, Instagram's a great place to reach me. I love people reaching out on there, and then, you know, we can get talking. My handle is FrickerUK, and my website is frickeruk.com.
Harry, thank you very much for being on. There is one last question that you must answer. This one is a bit more of a deep one, I apologise, but if you could give one piece of meaningful advice to help people live a better and more meaningful life, what would it be? And I guess I feel like I know the answer to this, but I'll let you take it away.
Keep moving. Just don't let anything hold you back. Just if you want to jump on that plane and go, do it. You know, it's easy. There's friendly people out there, and just go and meet people. And I think that will help anyone grow.
It's an awesome answer, Harry. Thank you. You're out in Canada at the moment, but we are childhood friends, and we are going to meet up soon for whitewater rafting in Wales, which is going to be good fun. So I look forward to seeing you then, and thank you for being on the podcast, and I'll catch you soon. Hey everyone, just a little send off before you get on with the rest of your day. If you really enjoyed the show, please like and share it. It's still a new project, and that helps me to spread the word. Obviously, if you really enjoyed the show, I'd really appreciate if you could subscribe via Stitcher, SoundCloud, or iTunes. For anyone who's feeling particularly generous, if you could leave a review on iTunes, it really helps with my ranking and helps me to get the show out to more people. And my final request, obviously this one is a big one, I recently set up a Patreon page, which allows me to get small contributions from you, the audience, to help me sustain the show, and also to help me improve the audio quality and attract more great guests. So if you're interested in supporting the show at all, you can head over to that at patreon.com/RickyRichards, where you can contribute to the show from as little as £1 a month, which is 25p per episode. And for that, I will feature your name in the show notes of every episode, plus a link to a website of your choice. Obviously, I appreciate everyone who listens, but if you contribute, that also helps me to make this more of a full-time gig, which is a big aspiration of mine. So thank you to everyone who listens. I hope you have a great day wherever you are in the world, and bye for now. Thank you.